Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Big One at One is brought to you by your local Honda dealer. It's time to get to your local Honda dealer for model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. The Big One today is a conversation with Dustin Fox. You can hear on the radio in Cleveland on our sister station, Bull and Fox, from 2 to 7 every day local time. He's an ESPN college football analyst, Browns radio and TV, and a former national champion at Ohio State. Dustin, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. How are you?
Hey, Grant, Danny. How you guys doing?
Doing well, man. Before we get to the Browns and this matchup, we were just talking and taking calls on Dwayne Haskins over the last couple of segments, who were trying to figure out exactly what he is here in Washington. You study Ohio State as close as anybody. When he was there, was he accurate as a passer? It's been a real problem for him in the league.
Well, I think anybody that plays college football is going to have an adjustment when they get to the NFL. We've seen the same thing with Baker Mayfield here in Cleveland. I mean, Baker was one of the most accurate college quarterbacks we've ever seen. And all of a sudden you get to the league and the coverage is so much tighter. The blitzes, the protections. I mean, there's so many things that go into it that it takes a time to adjust. He was accurate. Yes, at Ohio State he was. But certainly since he's been a pro, and he hasn't played a ton of football here with you guys in Washington yet. But he was an excellent, accurate college quarterback, but it's going to take some time for him to develop, no doubt.
Dustin, let's get into Baker Mayfield. The Wolves were at the door after, you know, dropping week one to the Ravens. A lot of people are going to drop games to the Ravens, by the way. They're excellent.
Right.
But, you know, so we do this kind of dance, this little cycle where everybody's yelling about Baker Mayfield. He can't do it. He's got all this help. Great game against the terrible Bengals team. Kind of staves off people yelling at him for a while. And I think the cycle is going to begin anew, you know, within the not-too-distant future. Where are we at on Baker Mayfield? Just big picture here.
Well, it's a big year for him. I mean, this is year three of his, you know, his rookie contract. And he had a great rookie season. Took a huge, you know, couple steps back last year, threw a million picks. And, you know, coming into this year, the thought was this is kind of a prove-it year for Baker. And you're right. I mean, week one, he was not good. Week two against Cincinnati, he bounced back. He played well. I think the guy still has the potential to be our franchise quarterback here in Cleveland. He just has to continue to grow. I mean, this is his third offensive coordinator in 3 years, his third head coach in 3 years. So he's gone through a lot of, you know, turbulence with the staff. And yes, they've got tons of weapons around him. I just think the Browns need to do exactly what they did in week two, which is allow him to kind of grow in this offense. Kevin Stefanski did a great job last year with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. And boy, you saw that, you know, the Vikings, it looked like they may be missing Stefanski a little bit with the way Kirk Cousins has played. But in terms of Baker, I think that he is a quarterback that needs support around him. I don't think he's like an elite player, but I think he could be a top 15 quarterback in this league, which if you have one of those guys, I think it gives you a chance to certainly go to the postseason and make some noise if you have the right pieces around you.
Nick Chubb's got a chance to lead the league in rushing, and Kareem Hunt, his backup, I mean, he might be one of the top 12 running backs in the league, and he's coming off the bench to get touches. Is this running game sustainably dominant, do you think?
I think it has to be. I mean, if the Browns are going to have any success this year, their defense is not good. They've got a really good defensive line, but the back end is, I think, really poor. So they're going to have to run the rock. And I believe the recipe for success for Cleveland is, you know, you got to run the ball, and this may sound excessive, but 35, 40 times a game. And you can do that because the Browns have a very good offensive line. And you mentioned the backs. I mean, I think they might be two of the top 10 backs. And if Nick Chubb's one of the best backs in the league, I mean, Kareem Hunt looks every bit as good as him, and they complement each other so well, too. I mean, Kareem, once he gets the football, it's like a punt return. I mean, the guy's running downhill in 2 seconds. So Chubb's more of that bruiser. You know, he's not a big-time make-you-miss guy. He's a break-tackle kind of guy, and he's got speed once he gets going downhill. But they really are. I mean, this could be special. I mean, you could have 2,000-yard backs in Cleveland, which hasn't happened, I think, since I think Carolina had one or had two in 2008 or something. But it's been a while.
Are folks growing tired of Odell Beckham's antics at all?
It depends, you know, who you talk to. I mean, on the radio show, our show, we talk about it all the time. I mean, it depends. It depends what it is, too. I mean, is it the watch? Is it the shoes? Is it the complaining or whatever it may be? I don't think Odell's a bad guy. I just think he is, you know, one of those people that is he's eccentric. He's out there. I mean, he's a celebrity more than a football player. So he gets a lot of attention. He likes to play the victim card a lot. But I still think he's got potential. I mean, he's got some serious talent. He showed it last week with this, you know, four catches and the big touchdown on that little stutter and go. But I just think if he gets the football, you know, at least 4, 5, 6 times a game, he'll be happy and he won't talk and complain. And certainly if the Browns are winning, I don't think he has any room to complain. But in terms of the fans, I think the fans get mad at us, honestly, when we complain about him, because they're just so, you know, like scorned as a team that has not had a lot of success for the last 20 plus years, that, you know, they've got this great player that they just want him to have success and stop bitching and complaining about him. The same thing happened with Josh Gordon. I mean, we my partner Bull and I were, you know, totally off Gordon, you know, multiple times and said, they got to cut this guy, get rid of him. The fans just were like, no, it's so much talent. Browns fans are obsessed with talent and not obsessed enough with the production.
Well, we know how that feels. Yeah, we'll take talent. I mean, we're the NFC version of the Browns in Washington, D.C., and have been for a while. Dustin Fox is on Twitter at DustinFox37, was a captain of a national championship team and played in the league. I listen to his show on radio.com with Bull quite a bit, and they do a great job in Cleveland from 2 to 7 every day. Offensive line. So you go out and you spend money this year, if you're the Browns, on Jack Conklin to anchor the right side, and you draft Jedrick Wills in the first round on the left side. The reason I ask is, Washington's defensive line might be one of the best in football. It's the one area where they can kind of take over games. How is the Browns' offensive front done through two games?
They've been great. They really have. I mean, we were worried that J.C. Treader, our center, was going to miss the first game because he had an injury through training camp. But he did play, and that's huge because he's kind of the quarterback of that offensive line. And then Conklin coming in has done a terrific job. The big concern for us was going to be what's going to happen to left tackle. And, you know, the Browns drafted Jedrick Wills out of Alabama with their top pick in the first round, and they moved him from right tackle to left. And that's a huge concern, certainly with the pandemic and not having an off season, you know, how's this guy going to adjust and be able to kind of fit himself in at left tackle. And so far he's played pretty well. He did get a little bit nicked up early in the season here. So we'll see how that goes, but you know, Conklin's been good. Had some injuries, of course, too. But it's going to be a challenge. There's no doubt. You guys have, what is it, 5 first-round picks on that D-line? Is that correct?
So, and another guy that's really good is Matt Ioannidis, who was a late-rounder. But, yeah, that's the only place where we're good.
Well, same with us on defense.
Yeah, when you said about the Browns' defense, I was like, man, that sounds familiar. Because it's a matter almost of, and I'll guess to make it work for Cleveland, like Garrett Richardson, Ogunjobi, Vernon, whoever else, they got to get home or else you're screwed. Because I know here in Washington, like if a quarterback extends a play out of the pocket, I mean, before the camera pans to downfield on the throw, you just know someone's running wide open.
Well, I mean, that's kind of been the case so far for the Browns this year. I mean, Joe Burrow threw 61 times and completed, 40 passes or whatever for 300 and some yards. They didn't win the game, but, I mean, he was having opportunities. And he was getting rushed like crazy, but still making opportunities down the field. And, you know, the one area the Browns do have, well, the one player, I guess, in the secondary that, who's really good is Denzel Ward, who the Browns drafted fourth overall a few seasons ago. I mean, he's a great player, but he can't do it all himself. I mean, he can only take away one receiver or one side of the field. And our safeties are Sendejo is starting at one safety, and he probably shouldn't be starting. He should probably be more of like a four-phase special teams guy, but he's starting at safety for the Browns. You know, they just got some issues. They're so thin at linebacker. Now, the Browns do get Mack Wilson back this week, who was a starter last year, a rookie out of Alabama, who's a good player. But outside of him, I mean, they're starting, you know, Sione Taki-Taki, who couldn't even play on special teams last year, and now he's starting at weak side linebacker. So it's not good.
Is there a chance, just double-clicking on that? I mean, Washington's offense is one of the worst in football, if not the worst. Where might they be able to move the football here? Is there any weakness that you could see that's exploitable for this Washington team going up against Cleveland?
You're saying Washington's offense versus Brown's defense?
Yeah, is there any way? I mean, we can't move the football against the three of us. I mean, now, is there something this weekend we might be able to get a first down in the first half?
You guys are like me and Bull's spirit animals, by the way. Talking about these
wait,
teams.
Wait till Monday. You'll get it. You'll understand.
they'll move the football. I mean, the Browns don't have the ability to stop anybody, I don't think, right now. I'd expect a high-scoring game. And, you know, I think the Browns should win the game. They're at home, and they're, you know, I think, a 7-point favorite. I think they're the better team. They have more talent, certainly, on the offensive side of the ball. But you guys will have some – you'll score some points. I mean, this defense is, as I said, you'll see, they're soft with the coverage they play. If Myles Garrett has a great game, that's going to help for us, certainly, because that's really the one area where he's unblockable. And you'll see it on Sunday. I mean, this guy's unbelievable. I mean, he's got, like, Hall of Fame potential if the guy can stay healthy throughout his career.
The Browns and Washington are so similar. As I'm starting to think about it, like, I'm like, is he talking about Myles Garrett or Chase Young?
I know,
like, there's
right?
There are a lot of comps here, a lot of similarities between those two teams. You guys are just.
By the way, do you guys still have a hard time like not saying the R word in
Washington? Yes. Oh yes. Oh yes.
I owe like $700 into the jar. Dustin.
The score right now is 6-2. Danny's used it 6 times. I've used it 2. But I also stop and like lose my track of thought all the time to not say it. So it's almost better if I just say it and don't sound like an idiot.
It's so hard. Like I've said it like 20 times this week, and I'm like, oh,
I'm telling you, it's so weird.
I get it, but it's tough. we had Spielman on our show. He's calling the game for Fox on Sunday, and he said it.
Well, I thought that was funny when I heard him yesterday on your show because he said, "Oh man, I got to stop doing that before Sunday." And I have not heard. I think Dick Stockton may have done
Stockton
it 11 times.
It. Yeah, he
but
did
he's
it,
in a
and
different
then he,
category.
Then he stopped himself trying to do it, like trying not to do it, and it sounded like the most awkward sentence ever.
He's like 77, so he's allowed to, but like everyone else is going to probably be asked not to. And so, yeah, I think there's a point where you just got to – I don't know how these broadcasters are going to do it, because in-game, it's going to be impossible to remember not to.
By the way, have you guys seen a clip of Stockton reading the teleprompter?
No, but I want to. What is that?
Where he like – he's going to break and he's reading not a prompter. It's like a card, right, for a promo. And he reads end script something at the end of it.
Oh, he burgundies it?
Ron Burgundy. Well, I know what I'm doing during the commercial break.
Go YouTube that. It's very funny.
That's very good. Well, that's awesome. All right, appreciate it, Dustin. And thanks for the time. We will see this weekend Washington and Cleveland, who gets to 2-1. Much appreciated.
All right, boys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, buddy.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. If people still want to hop in, seems like a couple of you still on hold to talk Haskins, we could do that. 800-636-1067 is the number on The Fan. Grant and Danny back, and so is football. Play against me, and your picks could be worth $10,000 with the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up today at radio.com/picks and just pick the winner of each week's games. No point spreads, no lineups to fill out, totally free to enter. Pick the most games right throughout the season. You could win $10,000. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up now at radio.com/picks. Speaking of picks this weekend, Danny, there are several games that you got to do a little digging before you feel confident in prognosticating. Chiefs-Ravens, two teams, 2-0, probably the two best teams in football. Instant Monday Night Football classic in the making, hopefully. But other games that jumped out at me is really difficult to pick just first glimpse when you run through them. Bears are 2-0, Falcons are 0-2. Do I really think Atlanta's going to fall to 0-3? I'll throw the Packers and the Saints in there. Green Bay's 2-0, and they've been much better than New Orleans, 1-1 so far. But it's hard to believe the Saints are going to be 1-2 through 3 weeks. So that always factors into my decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually think Bengals-Eagles is going to be a really good game. I know it sounds crazy. You would think Cincinnati loses in Philadelphia at home, gets its first win of the year. But I'm not convinced of that. The Eagles have been every bit as terrible as their record. They've been outscored by 28 points. They look horrible. And Carson Wentz so far is probably the worst quarterback in football through two games in terms of all the numbers. So I don't think it's a lock that you can just jot them down to beat the Bengals like you might have assumed before the year started.
I know, right? Rams-Buffalo, I think you may have touched
that's
on there,
a good
but
one.
That's a great one to me. How for real is Buffalo? How for real are the Rams? The Rams are good on the East Coast. Offensively, they've been good. Defensively, they've been fine. Buffalo's got all the ingredients. If you're like the real, we just took the next step, you win this home game. Now, I know it's not a normal home game because there aren't fans and stuff, but if Buffalo is the runaway favorite, division winner kind of game, it's a nice test for them early on this season. But, yeah, there are a few games that I don't have a great feel for. That's the NFL in general, but then it's also the NFL now in this weird sample where teams that maybe look terrible for a couple weeks, maybe that was their preseason, and maybe they come out looking, you know, going like gangbusters shortly thereafter. Hard to tell, man.
I'm excited for Sunday for Washington and Cleveland. You know that over the last couple of years I've been Cleveland Browns Paulson.
Cleveland Paulson, this is your time.
There are certainly, and I don't know why this is, but there are people, we all know a couple of them, that like they take on projects where they try to help people. You know, maybe they date people that, you know, they need to help, or they just like take these people into their lives that they need to help. I feel like maybe that's what I do with my sports teams. Like you'd think if you're going to pick a league pass team that you're going to follow and track and get all into, it's going to be a good team. Not a team that's just going to add frustration and annoyance and aggravation to your life.
Right.
But I picked the Browns for whatever reason, who are the AFC version, basically, of the team that we care about here in the NFC, Washington. But they have great offensive weapons. Like, they're one of those teams, it seems like they're always on the brink of becoming something. And they looked the part this past week on Thursday Night Football. The other thing about this matchup, they're 7-point favorites. Vegas must like the Bengals more than Washington, or at least must have liked the Bengals coming off of their week one outing against the Chargers more than they do Washington coming off of the dud in Arizona, because the Bengals were actually smaller underdogs than Washington. Part of that, I guess, could be that it's a divisional rival or something, but both of those games in Cleveland, so you get the same 3 points given to the Browns, and Vegas liked the Bengals to keep it closer than the good guys here in D.C.
Yeah, the initial line, 5.5 for both games, and I think people saw that and went, Cleveland, and bet on Cleveland. So now it's a touchdown. So now Cleveland's a 7-point favorite at home, whereas Cincinnati 5.5-point underdog, 6 in some books on the road. But yeah, I mean that's where they are in that group, right? They're in the Cincinnati pile. Washington is, and I think it's going to take a few weeks of the offense not doing anything and the defense just running out of steam and getting put in bad spots over and over and over again before folks kind of go, oh, maybe this is where they belong, you know? I mean, the
but
only other game.
Plus 7 against the Browns?
Yeah.
I like that.
I like it, too, for Cleveland.
No, I like it for the good guys.
For Cleveland. Yeah, Cleveland Browns Paulson. Put that
no,
bet down, right?
You're not those guys. The Washington football outfit. This is more the Philly game to me in terms of personnel than it is the Arizona game. Now, I don't think they win, and I could see them losing by 10, but I definitely don't think it's going to play out with them getting blown out. Because the Browns are going to try to pound the ball on them. I just think generally you can stay in games more when that's the plan going in than, hey, let's go 4 and 5 wides and scramble all over the place and throw it like the Cardinals wanted to. They're going to take longer to score. Maybe they hit on something downfield, Odell Beckham. But the Browns can – you heard Dustin Fox say it. They can be had when their defense is on the field if you can pass protect long enough to get something to the intermediate level or the deep – area of the field. I think that they're secondary susceptible. Their linebacking core is bad. really the only thing they've got going on defense is Myles Garrett in that D-line. Sheldon Richardson's going to feast. Larry Ogunjobi is a stud. People are going to be tired of hearing his name called by the end of the game, the former third-round pick. Olivier Vernon, the former Giant, who's had some big days against Washington, is going to live in the backfield if he's playing. But, I mean, I don't know. The back seven? I think this is a big opportunity for the passing game to make some big plays.
So there's I mentioned that kind of bottom bucket there, right, with Cincinnati, Washington, maybe a couple other teams. There actually is a separate, even lower, leaky bucket team.
Is that the Jets?
And that's the Jets.
Yeah.
11-point underdogs against the Colts. What have the Colts done to this point that makes you say they should be nearly, you know, 2+ score favorites over anybody? I know they beat Minnesota pretty handily. But Minnesota is in a pick'em game, basically, had the line open this weekend, and now they're 2.5-point underdogs to Tennessee. But Minnesota's been terrible, as bad as anybody in the sport, and they're not thought of the same way that the Jets are. Like,
Basically, Vegas is going,
I dare you to bet on the Jets. And right now it's 11.
Ooh. 11. They are now the team you pick every week in Survivor. Who's playing the Jets? That's what they are.
I already
they
used
look
the Colts
like a
once
1-15 team.
But I should use them this week.
Who'd you use?
I said I used the Colts in week 1 against Jacksonville, and they screwed me. But if I could, that's who I'd use. I'd use the Colts.
They look like they're going to go 1-15. Last week was a game. They shouldn't have won, but they should have absolutely played San Francisco close as everyone wearing a 49ers uniform was limping off the field. And they still got waxed. And it was only 31-13 because the 49ers basically just said, we're not going to get anybody else hurt today. And they were furious. I don't know if you saw this, but they're investigating the turf now at MetLife Stadium. The 49ers thought it wasn't either up to snuff or that something about it led to some of their injuries. And they're really upset. They have to play there again this week because they're playing the Giants. So I think they're just staying, basically, in training on the East Coast near the stadium. But they said that George Kittle could probably play, but they might hold him out because they're so worried about the turf.
Mm. Just a devastating blow to my fantasy squadron. But anyway, yeah, I mean, the Adam Gase quotes coming out and like are just staggering at this point. Just it showed like this. I think he had some kind of quote where he basically said, yeah, nobody said anything to me when it was asked about their inability to prepare or look like they knew what they were doing in San Francisco when his team's preparation that week, I guess, was called into question in some kind of press conference. Like, hey, were you guys ready to go? And he was basically like, yeah, nobody said anything to me, but they didn't like how we were preparing. I mean, unbelievable. What a gong show that is at this point.
A couple things to get to next on Grant and Danny. The improved play in the bubble based on less travel could lead to some changes to the NBA schedule next year. I want to hit on that. Plus, NFL TV ratings are out. Good news nationally, bad news locally. So we'll do that on the Fin. So credit where it's due. I got this from Axios. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. They wrote a blurb today about the travel being lessened in basketball as everybody went to the bubble, and so the travel means you now walk from your room to the court rather than having to fly all over the country. And there's a lot of people in hoops that think that it's led to better basketball in the bubble. General managers, athletic trainers, league officials believe that the lack of travel is driving as a force behind the high quality of play that everybody's observing. And if you get into some of the details, there's a quote here, this is the advantage that we have not had, one team health official told Baxter Holmes of ESPN. We're always tired. In the bubble, our guys have been rested. We've been able to get them recovered again and again. Another health official said the quality of play has a lot of people in hoops rethinking the concept of load management. Before, they thought heavy minutes were the leading cause of fatigue, and now there's more understanding or thought that it might actually just be the travel that leads to some of the issues with players always being run down. There was a call last month with Commissioner Adam Silver with all 30 general managers, and the concept was brought up of teams traveling to cities to play multiple games in a short span, like a series, rather than flying there, flying somewhere else, flying back later in the year, to cut down on some of the miles. The homestands you see in baseball, as an example, could lead to better play, they think, in basketball. It reduces the travel amid a pandemic, not to mention it's still going to be going on theoretically in some way next year. Levels the playing field for coastal teams who typically have to travel more than their peers. But the big picture, as Axios put it, is that the NBA, Danny, has made an effort to reduce travel in recent years. But if you just look at the numbers, comparative to the other sports, there's way more travel based on where the teams are.
Yep.
An average of 43,534 miles, nearly 7% more than the NHL, plays the same number of games. Major League Baseball, 31,000 miles. I mean, there are twice as many, basically, games traveled to. And 441% more shouldn't surprise you because of the lack of games in the NFL. But no sport travels like basketball, and they think that having everyone on site in the bubble has given us the better basketball that we're all noticing.
I believe it. I buy that. I mean, it's arduous. We don't think about it. I mean, the NBA needs to eliminate back-to-backs. That just can't be a thing. It's not with how physical these guys are, not with how fragile the ecosystem is, with where these bodies are pushed to the limit. You know, like guys are bigger, faster, stronger than they've ever been. Well, that comes at a cost. That comes at the, you know, instead of laying on your couch during the off season, these guys are training year round. It takes a lot to push your body to that level to compete at that high of a level. So back to backs need to go, and that needs to be a policy. You just can't have them, I think, anymore. We've come so far. And if you can limit travel, that's great. I just don't know how you do that come playoff time. It wouldn't behoove an organization to just give up home playoff games. So I wonder how that will manifest itself, because they give these guys so many days off between games going back and forth. And we complain about it as TV viewers, but it's reasonable to sort of monitor and help the health of these players. I buy that. I buy that travel is arduous.
The note that they have here is the pandemic has hurt sports leagues financially, but it also exposed some inefficiencies and is going to force changes that could stick around, and this could be one of them. Our biggest issue without a solution, one high-ranking league source told ESPN last October, is sleep deprivation. It's the dirty little secret that everybody knows about. And I'll bet you could say that about other sports as well, but I'll be curious to see, you know, just how that translates to change next year. We've talked about these seasons being used as experiments. Mm-hmm. You see it in baseball with some of the rules. You see it even in football with whether or not there's going to be preseason games, or are they necessary. You know, a lot of people after the first week said, we don't need preseason games, and it didn't seem like it. But you saw a ton of injuries. In fact, one of the worst weekends in the last 25 years as far as injuries to key players go in the NFL. Now, there's no way to trace that just back to the preseason, but there might be teams that try to do that when other clubs want to get rid of preseason games. Who knows? So something to think about, something to keep in mind for sure. Wanted to hit on that, though, here on Grant and Danny. I know you had something you wanted to get to as well.
What is that?
Oh, I thought before the break you had brought up that you had something we said we wanted to do. Am I wrong about that?
I completely forgot about what that is.
Well,
I'm not doing a bit.
I could be completely wrong. I thought you said that.
I don't remember what it is, if I had something.
All right, well,
I'm not trying to be difficult. I really don't remember. Did I say that?
Maybe I made that up, honestly. I thought for some reason the whole time we were doing that, I was like, all right, I've got to give Danny.
We
got to
make sure Danny gets his.
I wanted to be he's got to do his thing. So maybe in my mind I just came up with that. I thought you did say that we were going to do that, but maybe not. Maybe
this
I'm wrong.
This feels like I think this is me if I had to bet. I bet you I probably did say that, and I now completely forgot, and I'm just whoring.
No, you know what?
That's my
guess. We teased two things that we had to get to, and it was that and something else that was something that you brought up earlier, but maybe you didn't say, like, I have to get to that next segment, if that makes sense.
But I don't remember what the second tease was, because I was looking up NBA stuff, and I was trying to figure out, because that's I knew we were going to talk about that.
Oh, you know what it was? You said you wanted to talk about NFL TV ratings. That's what it was.
Ah, yes. There we go. Woo! That's true. I do want to talk about that,
do you
and
still
I
have
did
those
before
to bring up.
I do. I'll find it. So locally, the Washington football team year over year television ratings not good. Despite the Ron Rivera era, despite Chase Young and everything else, you're looking at a 14.3 local rating for Washington in week number one compared to 19 last year against the Eagles. Week number two, another drop. A 13 and change compared to 16 and change last year, both losses. Now, nationally, ratings are down about 8% overall in this sort of pandemic time, which I'm actually really surprised by because everybody's already at home. I thought we'd see a nice jump. But there have been some pretty big examples of good news for the NFL. It's still by far and away the best product, and it's doing incredibly well on television, so no doubts there. But you had a marquee Monday Night Football matchup that was way up compared to some other notes.
So when it comes to TV ratings, two things. One, I still don't know how to view the numbers at this point. Like, we're going, okay, this is good, this is bad. Maybe we just have to wait 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and figure out where we're at comparative to last year. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I never quite understand is this, and maybe you have an answer, maybe you don't. Are we accounting for the fact that with every passing year, and honestly every passing week, more and more people are going to be watching in ways they didn't used to? Like, if we're comparing TV numbers, how many people watched Monday Night Football this week compared to just years past? There are people that now watch Monday Night Football on their phones. There are people that now watch Monday Night Football streamed on some app. Maybe it's Twitter. Maybe it's Amazon Prime. It's all kinds of different weird things. So many of these games are available in so many weird ways. I know buddies that just, they get on like these Reddit threads or whatever, and they find these games and just watch out-of-market games on their laptop. I don't even know if that you're supposed to do that, but there's plenty of people doing that. Are we accounting for any of that when we talk about how many people are watching football? Because my guess is we're just still quantifying it as how many people are watching Channel 7 at that given moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So am I wrong about that? Are we adding up all those numbers? Because I'll bet you those numbers are still every bit as good as they've ever been before.
So there are, and there are also a million different ways that counting happens, right? So for like a streaming service or like a original programming with a streaming service. So the initial over-the-air, for example, we'd always have these discussions around Game of Thrones, right? Where it was the biggest thing on television. Everyone knows it's the biggest thing. But then you'd go, well, wait a minute. I know it's a subscription channel, HBO, but only 9 million people watched it live. Well, they are also able to sort of tabulate and count that people on-demanded it, if that's even a verb or a past tense if they're in, within 24 hours, meaning they could have started at 9:30 instead of 9 o'clock on the dot. And, you know, 10 million more people are watching it their way in their due course, which HBO is fine with because they just want you to watch the thing. So the overall numbers, it's more like twice that. I don't know how that's counted and tabulated when it comes to the NFL and kind of ratings, because you're right. There are, you know, I am getting notifications on my phone from Yahoo Fantasy, right, in the middle of the game, where it's like, Houston is in the red zone. Your player, Will Fuller's in the red zone. Click to watch live. And then I popped it on, and I'm watching that game on my phone while Washington is not completing passes. So, like, that's all happening. What does that count for? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that in terms of counting. I do know this. It's still the bell cow. It's still the most watched thing that we have, aside from like a special event here or there, the dumb Oscars or something like that. It's still the NFL 1 through 100. It's sprinkled with football games.
Well, how about Fox pays something like a couple $1 billion for its deal? And there was a report over the weekend that they might double their offer on their next deal.
Right.
League's probably going to be okay.
Yeah, the league's fine.
With or without whoever's checking out, it might just keep spinning on its access, and they might just keep having some games for a couple more years before they decide to tap out financially. They might just be okay. Dar is saying that the ratings are down, but the share is up. So my little experience in this game from looking at our ratings would mean that means that while fewer people might be watching than days past, of the people that have their TVs on, the percentage of them choosing the NFL has gone up. So you might just have more people doing other mm-hmm. things, I suppose. I don't know.
More options than ever before. I mean, that's unequivocal.
I'm glad we remembered that. That was close.
Goodness.
Can you imagine if the people didn't get that conversation today? What would have happened? Grant and Danny on the Fan. This date in Nats history is next. He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Thanks, as always, for making the show part of your day. Much appreciated. Means a lot. We always kick off our final segment with this date in Nats history. And today, a very special date in Nats history, because on September 23rd, 2007, 13 years ago, the final baseball game that will ever be held at RFK Stadium took place. And in that game, Chad Cordero got the final out with that flat brim cap over his eyebrows. The batter in the box retired on that final pitch, Jason Wirth.
Howard off second, Rowan off first. Two balls, two strikes, two out, top of the ninth. 5-3 Nationals. Cordero sets the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. He struck him out, and the game is over. Nationals and the Phillies a big blow, and they win the ball game 5-3.
I do not miss going to baseball games at RFK. Nats Park leaves something to be desired, I will tell you, GP, but I don't miss going to RFK for
any reason.
You're
not a Nats Park guy? Nats Park's grown on me quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Nats Park is, it's a park. It's a place. There's a field there. I wish it just had more that was D.C. and it's, I don't hate it or anything. I just, it, you know, there's some spots that could use some polish, and it looks a little bit run down in some spots, and I wish they would address. And the concessions are great, and the Nats win a lot, so that's always fun. But, yeah, I just – just to close that out, I do not enjoy going to games at RFK when it comes to baseball. So I'm glad we don't have to do that anymore.
If you want your own Washington Nationals World Series ring, you can enter to win your own World Series ring at natsringsweeps.com. That's natsringsweeps.com. Every entry helps support Nationals philanthropies, the official charitable arm of the Washington Nationals, which does incredible work in our communities. We started the show today talking about the injury to Brandon Scherff and how both of us have kind of gotten to a point where it's going to become really hard to justify paying him this offseason. I'm actually on record as saying, barring something crazy changing, there's just no way I'm giving him a $14, $15 million extension this offseason after he's now going to miss upwards of four or five games potentially. Moving forward now, it'll be the third straight year he missed serious time. I was surprised, though, when we had Brian Baldinger on the show in our second hour today, Danny, that he kind of went hard with the idea that you can't pay Brandon Scherff because of his durability and also because, as he put it, I'll find a guard in the fourth round. I found that interesting.
Same here. Yeah, for a guy that dissects offensive line play and run blocking and, you know, it comes from an old school physicality kind of perspective when he diagnosed his football. I was surprised to hear that as well. I mean, I teetered back and forth non-injury division for Brandon Scherff to pay him top of the market money. I didn't love the concept, even for a team that'll likely have well north of 60 some million dollars in cap space once you move on in theory from Alex Smith and have that $8.6 million dead cap number, but you're still saving about $15 million off of that. Even then, I wasn't that excited about giving $15, $16 million AAV to Brandon Scherff. Add in the injuries, and that kind of seals the deal for me. But, again, I'm so inconsistent on this. I could, after 2 weeks of him, you know, knocking down safeties on a screen pass that goes for 70 yards, could say, no, you have to keep him. You just have to. He's too important. I don't know. But right now, I'm not in the philosophical space to pay an off-injured guard top-of-the-market money.
If you missed Baldy on the show today or Dustin Fox, who does radio in Cleveland, previewing Browns and Washington this weekend, you can grab our podcast. They are available either just toggling back with the thumb on radio.com rewind or at thefandc.com and grantanddanny.com/audio when we are done today. One note out of Ashburn that I just saw that I found pretty interesting. Ron Rivera was asked about Troy Apke, and he kind of showed his hand that he does know what people are saying, and he is on Twitter. I don't know how much he follows or what he actually tries to pay attention to or not, but he said this today about Troy Apke in his press conference. Quote, I'll tell you this much. He didn't play as bad as people think he did, end quote. So he's defending Troy Apke, but he's also saying, I know what you guys are saying, and you're not quite right about Troy Apke.
It's not quite they're playing how they're playing. It's not quite that. But
that was
it's
my
also,
favorite.
Yeah,
how's
also
the defense
not the
playing, Jay? Well, they're playing how they're playing. That's a coach that can't lie trying to answer a question. That's what that
exactly
was.
Exactly right. So, but this is, he's not as terrible as you guys think he is. Aha! So take that. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, but it is better than they're playing how they're playing.
He didn't say he played well. He just said you thought he was terrible and maybe he wasn't as terrible.
Yeah, he was a 2 out of 10.
For Tommy and Dar and Danny, I'm Grant. Saying so long. Thanks for listening.
Okay, Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.